Hey there. Can you think of a time when the words someone else said hurt you? I bet you can. We've all been wounded by the words of others, and it probably doesn't surprise you when I say the tongue has a lot of power. Today, we're going to think about the words we speak, because you can't control what others say to you, but you can control your own words. Welcome to Revive Our Hearts Weekend. I'm Dana Gresh, and I'm so glad you're here today. Your tongue has the power of life and death. Now, that may seem like a big statement, but it is true. Those words come straight from the Bible in the book of Proverbs. And we're about to see just how much impact our tongues have, and we'll learn how we can control what we say. My friend Mary Cassian is here with some wise words. She says that your tongue determines the direction of your life. Let's listen.
The Bible compares the tongue to a rudder of a ship and to a bit in the mouth of a horse. And though relatively small, all three of these, the rudder, the bit, and the tongue, have tremendous power. A rudder turns a ship, a bit turns a horse, and our tongues turn our lives in the direction that we're going to go. The power of navigation is the element of speech that's discussed in the book of James, chapter 3. So let me start off by reading verses 2 to 4. James chapter 3, 2 to 4. For we all stumble in many ways, and if anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle his whole body. If we put bits in the mouths of horses so that they obey us, we guide their whole bodies as well. Look at the ships also. Though they are so large and driven by strong winds, they are guided by a very small rudder wherever the will of the pilot directs. Now, the first observation about the tongue that I want to make from this passage is that your tongue is your primary steering mechanism. It determines your direction. Remember, a rudder turns a ship, a bit turns a horse, and our tongues turn our lives in the direction that we will go. The comparison between controlling our tongues and steering ships reminds me of one of the worst nautical accidents in Greece's history. There was a captain of a Greek ferry, and he put his ship on autopilot. Now, captains are required to man the bridge whenever they're approaching the port for the last 7 miles of their journey, but he had sailed the route several times during the week, and he was pretty confident of the autopilot settings. So he took a nap, and the first officer and the crew left the bridge to watch a soccer match on television. And no one noticed when strong undercurrents took that ferry, which is called the Express Samina, and that ferry began to drift off course. 2 miles from its destination, the vessel struck a rocky islet, and it sank. The islet was clearly marked with a light beacon. No attentive seaman would have missed it. But the captain was sleeping, and he was unaware that his autopilot was taking his ship into disaster. 82 lives were lost, and most of them were tourists. The ship was on its way to this beautiful Greek island where they were going to have a wonderful vacation, but their promising vacation ended up in tragedy and loss. And the captain and the crew were charged with murder, neglect of duty, and violation of maritime procedures. How foolish of that captain to abandon the helm and to neglect the wheel of his vessel. And yet that's precisely what we often do with our mouths. We put them on autopilot and we fail to pay attention to the words that are coming out of our mouths. Your tongue is a steering mechanism. Your tongue navigates your ship. The word navigate comes from Latin words. Navis means ship and a gear means to drive. So to navigate is to plan, steer, and manage your movement and your course. And James notes that although ships are driven by strong winds, they're steered by a very small rudder wherever the pilot wants to go. And if a ship is not directed, it will be at the mercy of the wind and the currents and will be lost or shattered on the rocks. Do you know that that Greek captain made all kinds of excuses about his behavior? He blamed the circumstances, he blamed the ship, he blamed the crew, But he was the captain. It was his responsibility to drive that ship. James says, look at the ships also. Though they are so large and are driven by strong winds, they're guided by a very small rudder wherever the will of the pilot directs. So the challenge here is to accept responsibility for how you pilot your mouth. What comes out of your mouth, what you say, how you respond to circumstances, that's your responsibility. Your husband doesn't make you say nasty things. It's you. You choose to say nasty things. Your children do not make you irritable and snappy. It's you. You choose to pilot your tongue that way. And what about that quirky, aggravating coworker that gives you reason to complain? She's not responsible for that behind-the-back cutting remark that you said. You are. You choose to pilot your tongue onto the rocks of slander and criticism. Your tongue is your primary steering mechanism. It determines your direction. So you need to pay attention and steer it in the direction you want it to go. Let's continue reading in James chapter 3. We'll pick up where we left off, verse 5. So also the tongue is a small member, yet it boasts of great things. How great a forest is set ablaze by such a small fire. And the tongue is a fire, a world of unrighteousness. The tongue is set among our members, staining the whole body, setting on fire the entire course of life, and is set on fire by hell. For every kind of beast and bird, of reptile and sea creature, can be tamed and has been tamed by mankind. But no human being can tame the tongue. It's a restless evil full of deadly poison. Wow, those are some strong metaphors. Very strong metaphors, full of deadly poison. Second observation I want to make about the tongue is that your tongue has tremendous potential for good or for ill. It's either going to build up or it's going to tear down. It's a relatively small part of your body, but it plays a big part in your life. The average human tongue is only 4 inches long. It contains 8 muscles, so it can go up, down, side to side, speak. It weighs only 2.5 ounces, but this small part of the body gets us into bucket loads of trouble, doesn't it? James compares the power of a tongue to a spark of fire and to the power of an untamable wild animal. There's tremendous capacity, more power than we realize or can even begin to imagine. Words are so powerful. Words can heal, words can cripple, they can cultivate like a plow, they can draw blood like a dagger. Words make or break relationships. They can build up or they can tear down. They can bring peace or they can bring conflict. Words determine the destiny of individuals, families, communities, and nations. Proverbs 18:21 says, "Death and life are in the power of the tongue." That's a lot of power. Death and life. Words matter. They're not benign. They have consequences. They have personal consequences. The people of Israel, after being delivered from Egypt, were grumbling and complaining against God. They told God, "You brought us out here to make us suffer. We're going to die out here in the wilderness." And God told them in Numbers 14:28, "The very things that you've said out of your own mouths will happen." So that whole generation did die in the wilderness. And it wasn't because God wanted it. It was because the people got what they themselves said. Our words also carry consequences for others. Even though Jacob tricked his father Isaac to get the blessing, once Isaac had spoken the blessing, he couldn't retract it. Isaac said, "I blessed him, and indeed he will be blessed." He couldn't take his words back. They were going to have an effect. It's the whole principle of sowing and reaping. What we sow with our words has consequences for what we reap, and it also impacts what happens in the lives of others.
Our words can do a lot of damage, as Mary Cassian just explained.
Maybe you're living with some of the destructive effects, whether it was words you spoke or words that have been spoken to you. Proverbs chapter 15, verse 4 says, "A gentle tongue is a tree of life, but perverseness in it breaks the spirit." Now, friend, sadly, I've learned this one firsthand. You see, years ago, Bob and I attended a week-long marriage retreat, and we enjoyed some one-on-one time with a counselor who claimed to be a Christian, and he probably was, but I'm not sure he knew his Bible very well. While I was sharing some frustration about our marriage, this man suggested that maybe I had repressed anger, that I needed to find a godly, wholesome way to better communicate that with my husband. And then the counselor asked me, "How often do you cuss at Bob?" Well, the answer was never. Now, this man assured me that was the problem. Let me tell you, that wasn't true. What he was about to give me was not good advice, and it wasn't biblical. This man told me that he could help me tap into my true feelings. He said, "We could just start with one word." And he invited me to begin to use a very specific derogatory word with my husband right then and there. This man wanted me to speak an untruthful, hateful word over my husband, wanted me to say it viciously every time I felt frustrated with Bob. I'm so sad to say this, but I actually gave it a try. It's just a word, I reasoned on the way home. And it's not the worst of all the bad words. Maybe I am repressed. What if I'm repressed? Behind closed doors, in secret places where no one but my husband heard the ugly, harsh spews, I did what that counselor suggested. I let it rip. I can't tell you how much I regret that. Within a few days, more and more uncontrolled, unkind, far from gentle words. And here's the thing. With my own eyes, I could see my husband's spirit breaking. Just like Proverbs 15:4 claims, perverse language crushes the heart. I could see this word and my anger literally breaking his spirit. And here's the thing, I couldn't stop what I'd started. My heart breaks to think what lies and what wounds I planted in my sweet, good, image-bearing husband in those few short weeks of my unbridled, ugly, harsh words. I'm cringing even now as I think of it. Then what happened is those words started to pour out in other places in my life. I was driving down the highway and somebody pulled in front of me and suddenly I was spewing anger at them. I was losing my self-control. I was losing the Spirit's control over me. That's when I knew I had a problem. You see, I never had road rage before, and I haven't had it since, and I was fairly certain I had no repressed grudge towards that driver that I'd never met. On the way home, I asked the Lord to forgive me and to help me, and I knew that I'd lost control of my mouth, and I needed Him to help me regain it. God is so good to help us when we ask. He'll be so good to help you if you ask. That very week, I heard a Bible teaching on Isaiah 6. Now, the prophet writes about his vision of being in the presence of God, and he sees God on his throne, high and lifted up, the train of his robe gloriously filling the temple. Angels are on each side of the Lord, crying out together, "Holy, holy, holy." And then in verse 5, we see Isaiah's response to what he's experiencing. Listen as I read to you what Isaiah wrote. "Woe is me, for I am lost, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips, for my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts." The moment Isaiah was in the presence of God, he felt unworthy. "Woe is me," he said, "but why his lips?" His lips were not clean, really? That struck me as a little bit odd. He's in the presence of God's holiness, and the thing he's most worried about is his mouth? What would you think of in God's holy presence? What makes you unclean? I mean, there's so many sins we consider worse than what we say. Pornography, addiction, theft, overspending, abortion. Was Isaiah that perfect, or was God illuminating something important for us? Our words matter more than we think. They have power. And when used destructively, our words, according to Proverbs 15:4, can break the spirits of God's children, God's image-bearing, masterfully created children. Do you and I understand how deeply painful it is when we use harsh language to wound another soul? When sarcastic, hasty, biting words come right out of us, striking not only at the individual who is our target, but at the truth God declares over them in His Word. I wonder, how would you respond? How would I respond were we to be in the presence of our holy God and simultaneously be aware of the words that come out of our mouths? Would we cry like Isaiah, "Woe is me"? I fear for me, the answer is yes. Listen, my friend, God's holiness leaves no room for harsh, vitriolic, vicious words that so easily pop right out of us. And consider this, while it's true God will use your words if you let Him, it's also true that Satan will use them too if you let him. But there's a good reward here in verse 4 in this passage in Proverbs. A gentle tongue is a tree of life. I want to be that woman. I want to be a woman who chooses gentle words, tempered by wisdom, so that God can be the one to make use of them. Jesus actually said something like this when He walked the earth. It's recorded in John 6:63. It is the Spirit who gives life. The flesh is no help at all. The words that I have spoken to you are Spirit and life. Words have power, my friend. We've got to use them with wisdom. And the reward of using them well is that we cooperate with Christ and we bring life as He did. Now, if right about now all of this is feeling like too much, it's so hard, a lot of work, you've got to lean into John 6:63 a little bit with me. It's the Spirit who gives life, not me, not you, not our mouths, the Spirit. And let's not forget that gentleness and self-control, they're both fruit of what? Of our white-knuckling to have better words? No. Gentleness and self-control are the fruit of God's Spirit. Rest easy, my friend. If it seems hard, if being gentle seems difficult, it should be, because you're going to need God's Spirit to help you. Well, we've seen the power that our words have, and we've seen the importance of speaking life and having a gentle tongue. Now, we're going to look at the big connection between what we say and what's going on in our own hearts. Nancy DeMoss-Wolgemuth is going to show us how our words are like a mirror.
One of the themes that comes through many times in the book of Proverbs is the connection of our words to our heart. In fact, I counted 11 verses, there may be more than that, where the word heart is in the same verse with the word lips or tongue or mouth. The connection is made over and over again. The contrast, for example, in chapter 10, verse 20, the tongue of the righteous is choice silver, but the heart of the wicked is worth little. The tongue is connected to the heart. Proverbs 15, verse 7, the lips of the wise disperse or spread knowledge, but the heart of the foolish. Why doesn't it say, but the mouth of the foolish does not do so? The contrast is between the lips of the wise, and then it talks about the heart of the foolish. Why? Because there's a connection between what we say and what's in our hearts. You'll find that there are many places where we read about the mouth or the words of the wicked, or the mouth of the foolish. Then there are other places where you read about the mouth or the tongue or the lips of the righteous, or the words of the pure, or the tongue or the lips of the wise. What's the connection there? The tongue reveals the condition of my heart. The words that I speak are a mirror into my heart. The words come out. That's what's heard. That's what's evident. But they reveal what is not so evident until I speak the words, and that is the condition of my heart. So if I'm a foolish person, I'm going to speak foolish words. If I have a wicked heart, the words that come out of my mouth are going to be wicked words. Hundreds of years ago, Francis de Sales said this. He said, "Our words are a faithful index of the state of our souls." So you want to know what's in your heart? Jesus said, out of the abundance or overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. So if I have a critical heart, what kind of words are going to come out? Critical words. If I have a mean-spirited heart, What kind of words are going to come out of my mouth? Mean words, unkind words. If I have a proud heart, I'm going to speak arrogant words. If I have an unloving heart, I'm going to speak unkind words. A self-centered heart is going to speak selfish words. And when I speak angry words, what does that tell you about my heart? It means I've got an angry heart. If I speak profane words, what does it tell you about my heart? It's profane. Impatient words come out of an impatient heart. Complaining words come out of a discontented heart. A heart that is selfish is going to talk about what? Self. Now, we've seen that a wicked heart is going to produce wicked words. Conversely, if we have a pure heart, a righteous heart, the overflow is going to be words that are pure and righteous. So if I have a loving heart, what kind of words am I going to speak? Loving words. If I have a kind heart, I will speak kind words. If my heart is unselfish, as I saw in that Christian leader, I'm going to speak other-centered words. If I have a humble heart, I'm not going to be saying arrogant things. I'm going to be saying humble things. I'm not going to be saying things that draw attention to myself or my accomplishments or what I've done. If I have a humble heart, I'm going to be lifting others up. I'll have the attitude of John the Baptist, who said of Jesus, "He must increase and I must decrease." Where do those words come from? A humble heart. If I have a pure heart, I will speak pure words. And if I speak words that are sensual or corrupt or ungodly words, I'm showing that there's a heart condition, that I've got a problem with my heart, that my heart is corrupt, and that's why I'm speaking corrupt words. Proverbs talks about a gracious woman. If I have a gracious heart, I will speak gracious words. I think of some women I know who are, they're just gracious people, and when they open their mouths to speak, they're encouragers, and some of you in this room are this way. If I have a grateful heart, what kind of words am I going to speak? Thankful words. A thankful heart produces thankful words. And again, you can think of people that you know who, they can be in the midst of a really troubling situation, but they're talking about the goodness of God and the faithfulness of God in the middle of what's a very difficult situation. They're saying thankful words because they have a thankful heart. If you have a wise heart, you're going to speak wise words. Now, the challenge is that I want to speak wise words, but I don't always want to pay the price to get a heart of wisdom, because it takes work and effort to fill my heart with God's word so that I have wisdom inside of me that will come out in wise words. If I have an honest heart, I'm going to speak truthful words. If I'm speaking words that are deceptive or not true, it's telling you something about my heart. And if I have a heart for God, a spiritually minded heart, it's not going to be difficult for me in the course of everyday conversation to talk about spiritual matters. Because out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. If I can't talk about the Lord in the course of conversation, it means that my heart is not as focused and set on the Lord as it needs to be. Because if I have a heart for the things of God, I will be able to talk about the things of God. And so as we think about our words and our hearts, the words that we speak are really the thermometer of my heart. Those words don't determine the temperature. The thermometer doesn't determine the temperature. The thermometer just registers the temperature. And the words that I speak register the temperature, the condition of my heart. And if you want your words to change, it's not enough to focus on changing your speech. What we really need is a heart change. And some of us need major heart surgery. To say honestly before the Lord and maybe before another person, maybe before your mate who would help hold you accountable, I realize that the words that I speak show that I've got some issues in my heart that are very serious. I'm seeing that those quick, thoughtless, careless, unrestrained, gossiping words reveal a condition of my heart that needs to be repented of. Now, I don't want you to leave here feeling overwhelmed and like, I'll never open my mouth again because I just can't say anything right. What I do want you to do is to repent. to agree with God, to humble yourself, to acknowledge whatever God shows you about your heart, as I'm being forced to do about my own heart as I'm studying this, and to get before the Lord and say, Lord, change my heart. Fill me with your Spirit so that when I'm under pressure, when I'm speaking to those children, when I'm speaking to my mate, when I'm speaking to my coworkers, when I get on the phone in a conversation, what will come out will be the overflow of pure heart, of a heart that is controlled by the Spirit of God.
You know, those words from Nancy really have me thinking about what I say and what my words show about my heart. You too? I hope this episode has encouraged you to remember the power of your words and to seek God's help for controlling your tongue. Revive Our Hearts wants to always bring you teaching that helps you thrive in Christ. And this episode is made possible thanks to the support of listeners like you. If you'd like to make a donation of any amount to Revive Our Hearts, you'll receive a copy of Nancy's new devotional, Incomparable, 50 Days with Jesus. And it includes a special reading plan to guide you through Jesus's life during the Lenten season. And that reading plan is only available through Revive Our Hearts. You can give a gift by calling 1-800-569-5959. That's 1-800-569-5959. And just ask for Incomparable. Or go to reviveourhearts.com/weekend and click on today's episode. We all face storms in our life, conflict in a relationship, financial struggles, health issues, grieving a loss. Maybe you're in the middle of a storm right now. Those are tough places to be, but did you know that you can have peace even in the midst of your storm? We'll talk about that next weekend. Thanks for listening today. I'm Deanna Gresh. We'll see you next time for Revive Our Hearts Weekend. This program is a listener-supported production of Revive Our Hearts in Niles, Michigan, calling women to freedom, fullness, and fruitfulness in Christ.